And you're back with Annie on 3CR Breakfast, and we've got the makers of this fantastic series in the studio with me at the moment, Spike and Kelly. G'day, you guys.
Good morning, Annie. Hey.
How are you going, Annie?
Goody. This is an extraordinary thing. I was wondering, to begin with, how you were able to speak to the people who this amazing onslaught of COVID off the streets into hotel rooms. How did you actually get to speak to them to find out what their experiences were?
Well, that was pretty easy, wasn't it, Spike? We pretty much relied on our networks.
Yes. I work. I was doing some peer outreach with a local homeless health service, and just developing, I guess, relationships with the people that we support, and also colleagues that work at the same organisation. We were able to, have conversations, and they were able to put forward names that they thought would be up to discussing, you know, their situation.
This is very traumatic, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was amazing.
So how, I mean, COVID hit and then the government made orders, you know, it will be so. So what happened to, and of course, homeless people, there's a whole range of reasons for why people are actually on the street. Bundling all these people with all their various needs into hotel rooms, how quickly did that happen?
Well, I guess it happened over time. I guess so. The way that the information was shared was problematic,
right?
Yeah, because there wasn't a public announcement.
No,
It wasn't as if they were sharing flyers. So it was through outreach workers from particular organisations that were funded to provide the accommodation.
Yes,
and so people were hearing it from different. So there's a number of organisations that do that type of outreach work, like street outreach work.
Yeah.
And so people were finding out from, in dribs and drabs what this emergency accommodation or this hotel accommodation was going to be like. And so how to apply, how you get in.
There must have been a lot of fear.
There was definitely a lot of fear because as the teaser, the intro sort of highlights, it became illegal. So all that effort.
To be on the street.
You know, what Robert Doyle tried to make, you know, being asleep on the foot, what they tried to make illegal in 2017 came to pass overnight through the emergency powers, through the emergency, the legislation that was passed.
And of course, people who are sort of bourgeois or working class with houses would think that they're doing a good turn. This is a good thing to do. I mean, it's good because it's because of the health imperatives, but people probably don't realise the issues for people who are on the street.
And the peers that we spoke to, they did understand that it was a health measure. Mm. Like they had to stay in a hotel accommodation to protect the community from the coronavirus. But what the series reveals is that, you know, it's a big step moving from the footpath suddenly, you know, a life of freedom. You can walk around whenever you like. Suddenly you're in hotel accommodation. You get a sense of a bit of self-worth about yourself and start thinking about how you might like to, you know, get out of homelessness and move forward in your life. And, you know, some of the people that we spoke to, in which the series reveals, is that the lack of services that were there for people, you know, and what was the exit plan? What's going to happen to us now after here, you know?
Of course.
And so there was this constant anxiety with people. They have this accommodation now. How long is it going to last for? You know, the series also reveals that the funding for this was in like 2-week stints. Yeah. Services were told you could have funding for 2 weeks and then you'd have to apply again. So it was very ad hoc, very tenuous. And that really
and paperwork driven.
Yeah, and the workers, they said they felt like travel agents constantly having to ring hotels and organise accommodation, like you know, week to week. It was pretty crazy.
And what about the interaction with the hotels and motels? How did that, I mean, did that mean that people had to move to outer suburbs or what?
Yeah, they were
in some cases, yes.
Yeah.
That
some,
they didn't know anything about.
That's right. And that's, I think that's a really important point. They had no control over where they were going.
Right.
How long they were going to stay. The people, and I think just going back a little bit is so, when you have, like, people have their routines,
yes.
Especially people that are sleeping rough have a routine. They know where they can get their breakfast. They know where they can get their shower. They know that they're, because everyone's appointment, all their contact with their support workers, that all fell through. And not all organisations were able to arrange telephone conversations. Not everyone has phones. And so, quite literally, their lives are turned upside down overnight.
In fact, I've met a person who lives on the street who's deaf. So,
yeah.
That would be really...
And people have been spent time in prison, in isolation, in institutions. And so it's not always, especially for, you know, people's mental health, it wasn't always a good idea. For them, it's not all... not so accommodation in that sort of setting isn't ideal for everyone.
No, that's what I was really getting at, because there's such a variety of different reasons for why people are there. I mean, some people have lost their footing and have no place, don't have any money to actually, and so then they build a life on the streets, which all humans create routines. The things that are happening to people on the street are the same things that are happening to people who aren't on the street.
Yeah.
I mean, humans are humans are humans, right?
Yeah. 100%. And I guess, well, I get what I know. It's a very, as Kelly was saying, it's a lot of people had their bags packed a lot of the time because they didn't know how long it was going to last. And that sort of insecurity, if you had any like AOD or mental health issues, it added to the stress that you were experiencing. And in many instances, it made life even more complicated.
Mm.
But there's all, just to be, I guess, just for a bit of balance, for some people,
there was a
couple in that we interviewed that it was their opportunity to get housed. It worked. For some people, it did. The hotel accommodation wasn't home, but it led to housing.
Wow.
The increased sort of impetus into the outreach work for a minority of people worked out really well.
Yeah, you know.
But for the majority, from the people that we spoke to, what their biggest concern was what next, and the environment that they were put in while they were in this accommodation. Because there's certain, you know, like we all have people that we want to avoid in our lives.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, my God.
Do you,
I hadn't even thought of that.
So, you know, like, they share an experience of homelessness. That doesn't mean that everyone who's homeless gets along.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, it could be a bit scary.
Yes. And the series
Dangerous.
Definitely does reveal that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there must be a code, a parallel cultural code that goes with being in the homeless sphere, which is different from the code that is existing in the housed community, which people may not recognise, right?
But also, I think to answer that, I think any people are people, as you were just saying, and there's certainly no solidarity amongst people that are homeless just because they share, as Spike was saying, that lived experience doesn't mean that they have each other's backs.
No.
At all.
That's what I mean. I don't mean code as in a code of honour. I mean a code about how one should do things in relation to each other. You know, like who's a powerful person, who's not a powerful person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. That personality hierarchy exists everywhere. And
that's what I was getting at.
And when you have the freedom to be able to move from one place to another, you can avoid confrontation. You can avoid difficult situations. But when you're forced into a building with people that you may not have anything in common with, it increases people's stress and.
And someone was murdered during the hotel accommodation stay. We don't cover that in the series, but one of our peers did mention that someone was murdered at the front of one of the hotels, and that may have been because everybody that was homeless was brought together and dumped in the one place, you know. So, yeah, it led to a lot of tension.
Like, it's difficult to, I guess, what the alternative, I think what this points to is when you don't have a human rights-based housing policy, when you don't build public housing, the authorities, I guess, in inverted commas,
have too much power over.
They have too much power. They have too much control. And the only option was this hotel thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If there was a commitment to build public housing
a long time ago,
you know, that we had that, they wouldn't be forced into this improvised ad hoc thing.
Also, I mean, I was wondering about the hotels because, I mean, doesn't that give them more power than that probably should? And also, isn't it an expensive option?
Very much so.
Well,
one of our peers did say that they feel rather cynical about it, that as the hotel industry was ailing, mm-hmm. suddenly they got all this cash to house poor people.
Yeah.
So it was a kind of boon for them.
Yeah, very interesting.
And they're not they weren't trained.
No,
weren't trained to manage. Well, I guess the whole thing was about people were being managed, but they weren't. They didn't have. You know, they didn't get into the hotel industry to work with. They just had no idea what was going.
They're
on.
They're not part of social services.
No.
That's right.
And
neither should they be.
And no. That's exactly right. And then there's the other thing of people who live are dealing with living outside. Inside is a whole other issue, isn't it? Because that's the thing about that kind of living. It's all about routines, but it's about internal routines, not external routines, right?
Yeah, and also, you know, people that are in that sort of situation may sleep on somebody's couch on one night, may stay at a shelter on another night, and so they do their thing.
Yeah, and they're not responsible for the world around them in that way.
So all those other options were taken away.
Mm.
And so that would have had a big impact on their mental health. And so the whole AOD stuff, like
that's alcohol and other drugs.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like people self-medicate to cope, and when you're under more stress, as someone that's from the AOD community, I self-medicate when I'm really stressed, and I can imagine. And people spoke to that you know there was a short increase in benefits. And so when you're in a stressful situation, people do what they need to do to get through.
Mm.
And that sort of increases issues.
The people who are working as support workers, you also cover that.
Yes, we do. Yes.
Yeah. And so their voice is in there as well. They must have quite a lot of opinions about this.
Yeah, and it's great to get their perspectives.
It is, but it's a difficult space. I think that was really valuable. Having the voices of people that were providing support to their to the people.
I mean, it's sort of like the lynch between the two worlds, aren't
yeah.
they?
It's like a bridge, I guess. Yeah, between. Yeah. It's a very difficult space to be in because you're trying to protect people's privacy. The confidentiality of their situation, and
be respectful,
and be exactly, and also, and to be able to continue the support that they're providing, and also knowing that it wasn't a great for many of their, I guess, clients. I don't like using that word. It was, I'm repeating myself. It increased a lot of the strain that they are experiencing.
Yeah, and so the support worker becomes the face of pushing people around.
It's a difficult.
Yeah. Well, that's right. And there's some very fine people who
definitely
work in this space because it's a really tricky space. Tell me about. We'll go back to the making of this documentary, Homeless in Hotels. It's done in three parts. Tell us about how you built it. You know, because it's a project. It's a radio project. It's about giving people voice. But when it comes down to the brass tacks, it's a piece of art as well. So tell us about how you've done that.
It's about coming up with the initially it was Spike who said, you know, these voices haven't been heard. They really need to be documented. So we were collaborating with a friend, David Border-Giles. He's a researcher in homelessness at Deakin. We partnered with him, And we also found out that there was a grant going from the Regina Brindle Foundation, and they're set up to provide grants to alcohol and other drug and mental health peers and consumers to create projects in the community that give voice to that community. So we applied for the grant and we won it.
Bravo.
Which was amazing. And that was 18 months ago. So then we started there. We started developing our interview questions. You know, what did we want to know? And we started reaching out through our networks and getting our peers, organising interviews throughout the winter of last year. And that was hard with lockdowns, coming in and out of lockdown. But we struggled through. We got there. And then the big job comes to, okay, now we have all this information, all this data. How do we tell these stories? What stories are we going to tell based on what our peers and workers have told us? And so that's the crafts.
And you have a responsibility too.
That's
people.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why 3CR is so good.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we, and that took all the transcribing of all the interviews, that took a while, and then bringing that all together and crafting these stories. And we came down to it making three episodes.
Which are an hour long, right?
Oh, about 45 minutes.
45 minutes,
yeah.
Okay.
And so the first episode we introduced to our peers. They take us on the journey of their experience in hotel accommodation and how they manage their drug use and their mental health. And we meet a couple of support workers who can provide a bit of a broader context. And then in the second episode, we meet some more peers and they talk about their opportunities and difficulties in accessing services during lockdown in hotels, and we meet some support workers who provide the background context. And then in the third and final episode, we discuss how the law impacted the homeless community, and we find out what this hotels to homes housing scheme looks like, you know, post hotel
these
stays.
Little houses that they're doing.
Well,
that's one of the response. I mean, that's a lot. That's been going on. The small house thing is just
tiny house.
Yeah, the tiny house.
Tiny house.
Yeah, it's, that's been a response to the homelessness issue, I guess. That's been going for about almost a decade. But I think just go back a bit. I think the importance of, because you know, Kelly and I have both experienced homelessness, and you know, I'm happy to talk about my AAD and my mental health sort of struggles. It's really important that we think that people who have had a lived experience producing stories about, you know, it's like what's in the corridor, nothing about us without us. I think that's really key, and just how people felt to be managed. You know, it was like they were a problem or
yeah.
You know, like...
I get it. I know what you're talking
and
about.
And it's just taking some notice of the media when this was happening, there was nothing, you know. We heard from, you know, all sorts of different people. We never heard from people experiencing homelessness or people that had issues with addiction or mental health. We all have them. You know, we all have our mental health issues. We all have – it's just that people that are housed are able to do it in the privacy of their own home.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah, and that's – and I think that's a really important – and I'm glad that I eventually got there because I think that problematic – what is seen as problematic behaviour in the mainstream newspapers is behaviour that I'm trying to think of the right word.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
We all perform those behaviours.
No, but also, you know, it's provable that people who lived in forests, you know, thousands of years ago, chewed on cocoa leaves to give themselves a buzz. I mean, it's not rocket science, is it?
No.
The stigma and prohibition in our society has a real effect on people, and that's why we're really proud of the series. Peers are able to speak candidly about their drug use in the hotels, and because we are peers, they felt comfortable enough to speak to us in that way.
I'm really proud. I think I can say safe. We're really proud that we created a safe space where people could talk about their whatever they were doing, in where they weren't, didn't feel like they were going to be judged or corrected or anything like that related to things that we all experience as human beings. And it was a very stressful situation for them. Their lives were turned upside down overnight and all their supports evaporated. You know, like even, you know.
I know that some people made a road towards housing, but what about negative? Are people still dealing with this?
With what, Annie, sorry?
With the stress that they felt they had from the experience after COVID.
Well,
is it still happening?
Well, most people are just back on the street.
Yeah, well, that I've noticed.
Or in rooming
houses. And it's
really
cold at the moment.
Yeah, I guess it's... yeah, I guess for the letdown of feeling, you'll hear it in their
voices.
Yeah, that when they sort of, as Kelly said earlier, they were really clear that this wasn't a housing.
No.
This wasn't a housing program. It was about trying to protect bourgeois middle class, you know, Melbourne. They were really clear about that, and they didn't feel
bitter.
Yeah,
let down.
Clear.
Yeah. Really let down.
Yeah. And
it was really cruel. Like, people were thrown in and out of hotels with lockdowns. Lockdown happened, they all got accommodation. Lockdown ended, they were all thrown back out. Mm. It was just treating people like, as we say, cattle. You know, it wasn't great. It wasn't very great.
And just what you said about the tiny homes thing. Like, our service did some outreach to the tiny homes, and they went in lockdown before anyone else did. And this was when they were testing people. They were, you know, I think the state government was sending people out to rapid test people. And just from one inconclusive result, their entire sort of, because they have like little neighbourhoods.
Yeah, I know.
They were completely locked down. And the same was with the towers in Flemington.
Yeah, I know. The attitude towards people who are poor, it's like it's a sin.
Yeah.
Or a contagion in itself.
And I think that's another...
How bizarre, isn't it?
That's another important, I think, aspect of the series is drawing people's attention. So this doesn't happen anywhere else in our community. It happens to people who are experiencing homelessness and poverty.
As soon as the towers happened and then later on exactly the same kind of thing happened in a block in a more salubrious suburb, they weren't locked down.
No.
You know, the whole place wasn't locked down in the same way.
And I guess that highlights the sort of inequality in access to resources, in access to support, and just the whole the ideological sort of setup that we have.
It's an embarrassment, really, isn't it?
Well, when you think about it, sort of, yeah, it is. It's really sad. I mean, I don't want to be flippant about it, but it is. It's, you know, like I'm really That's one of the great things about, we hope, that people realise that, you know, like this wouldn't happen to anyone else. You wouldn't put anyone else through that. You know, like, yeah, the whole insecurity and not knowing. And I guess there would be people that would be still, you know, managing how that affected them now.
Yeah, that's right. Very insecure and also trauma. Trauma stays in your bones.
Yeah, it's just another example to them that the government thinks that they're worthless.
And one of
our peers does articulate that.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in and talking to us about this.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Annie.